Hello, I'm Phil Rowland, and I'm excited to be back for our fourth edition of The House View with our head of research, Sameer Chopra. Since our last podcast in early July, we've continued to see challenging market conditions, particularly in the real estate capital markets, as cost of debt rises and sentiment wanes. And of course, we have the big national challenge of the day, which is our acute supply side issues in housing. But it's not all bad. Overall leasing activity has been quite buoyant, particularly in the office sector, and there's been a growing focus on alternative asset classes. So what lies ahead? In this episode, we'll discuss the economic outlook, what to expect when it comes to asset pricing and the debt markets, and also the outlook for the leasing sector and some of the opportunities that investors are looking at in the alternative space. But to kick us off, let's talk about the overall economic outlook. So, Sameer, we seem to have skirted a recession, both in Australia and most other major markets globally. Good to see inflation moderating at around 4-5% range, and after being up at 8% in December of 22. So, having said that, the slowdown is very evident to everybody. So how would you frame the overall economic outlook for the next quarter and into 24?
Thanks, Phil. Yeah, look, we've managed to get through a large part of the fixed rate mortgage cliff without, you know, too significant an impact on the economy. Retail spend is broadly flat to maybe even slightly positive over the last 12 months. But, you know, it's up over 30% on 2019 levels. And the employment picture has also been very robust, with, you know, over a million jobs added since early 2020. And jobs and population growth has been the real positive surprise, and they've, you know, helped to shield the economy. That being said, like you said, you know, from here on, we expect more pedestrian growth over the next 4-6 quarters, potentially at half of the usual rate of growth. So not a recession, but a slog. And what we find during these more challenging times is quality matters. During boom times, you know, everything gets a tailwind. But during tougher times, you know, the quality really starts to matter.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think we're definitely seeing this play out in the leasing market, particularly in office, where this bifurcation of prime and secondary markets is really taking hold. And what's been very interesting has been the resilience of the leasing market, particularly in office in the last couple of quarters, which of course heavily contrasts with the investment sentiment in the sector. Occupier sentiment earlier in the year was strong as companies came off a two-year period of strong financial and employment growth, really wanting to set their workplaces post-pandemic. But of course, the wider economic environment has shifted. There's no doubt about that. Normally, you know, with lowering levels of business confidence like we've seen over the last 6 months, leasing should have slowed down. But that's not actually what we're seeing, especially at the premium end of the market. So, Sameer, what are the stats on rents and vacancy telling us?
Yeah, Phil, look, we've just done a check-in with the teams on the ground, and you know, rent growth is moderating now. It's almost flatlining as the year sort of wears on. But it's all very location specific. So if you look at office, there are two very sort of contrasting markets in Perth and Melbourne, with Sydney somewhere in the middle. So Perth has continued to see face rent growth and flat to sort of declining incentives. So we're on pace for low to mid-teens of net effective rent growth, which is really good. In Melbourne, net effective rents are likely to be down about 6% for the year. And that's mainly because incentives have started to increase in that market. Look, and Phil, for me, you know, the single biggest driver of rent outlook continues to be supply of new stock in the short term. So, you know, new supply continues to impact sort of the incentive outlook. Industrial is a different ballgame. Rent growth continues, but with all this new supply coming in, both in 23 and in 24, you know, both existing and spec stock, along with a little bit of sublease, we are just starting to see some signs of incentives rising. While face rents are now sort of just holding firm, maybe rising a little bit, depending on the submarket. So, you know, in industrial, I'd say just keep an eye on the incentives and rents kind of flatlining. But Phil, you know, you mentioned the strength in our leasing business. Is this widespread or just in some pockets?
Well, you know, it's not. It's a bit of a generalisation, I suppose. So it's not totally broad-based. Inquiry levels are certainly healthy in office, but we're seeing some softening in industrial. If we look at Sydney leasing, for example, the size of the individual inquiries has increased by about 10%. In aggregate, square metre of inquiries in 23 should exceed 2022 by about 10%. So occupiers are keen to come to the market with briefs well in advance of those lease expiries so they can really methodically work through their really important shifts in their workplace settings post-pandemic. Interestingly, some sectors that have been a little quieter of late, like technology, for example, are now active again. You know, to your point around industrial, Samir, you know, leasing inquiry volumes are really returning towards more normal market conditions. So we're seeing some 30 to 35% reduction across the board from the peaks that we saw in 2021 and 22. The majority of that reduced demand is from the larger end occupiers in that sort of 15,000 square metre plus range. But we're still seeing good activity for those smaller ticket size deals.
Yeah, Phil, and one of the other things, of course, you know, in the conversations is outgoings are a real challenge. You know, they've increased by 10 to 20%, adding to sort of cost pressure for clients. And that's everything, right? Like electricity, building insurance, land taxes. And just on this outgoing, you know, particularly taxes and stamp duty, speaking with our commercial valuation teams, you know, they've been highlighting the risk to capital values just from recent regulatory changes that we've seen.
Yeah, no doubt. Samir, I might just switch to sort of some global perspectives. I think it's always important to consider that. And sort of getting back to the leasing trends, perhaps we can sort of touch on what we're seeing globally on vacancy. There's a lot of focus, obviously, on US office vacancy, which ranges anywhere from 20 to 35%, depending on the market. And of course, industrial vacancy has you know, been in the low single digits in most markets around the world. So what can we learn from how this picture is evolving? You know, do you think it's getting tougher?
Yeah, Phil, office is really interesting. The office vacancy is very nuanced globally. We do have that 20 to 35% in the US. But, you know, away from that, it's kind of high single digits in Europe and, you know, mid single digits in parts of developed Asia. And, you know, what I'd say is in the first half of this year, office vacancy globally appeared to be stabilizing. So put another way, it's a tough story is not getting incrementally worse. Vacancy may edge up, but at a much slower rate. Industrial vacancy, on the other hand, has started to pick up more markedly, right? It is still low by historical context, but slower decision making, slower take up means we are starting to see, you know, industrial vacancy increase. And just on industrial, you know, I think also just the way occupiers are thinking about their inventory situation. And I think we're going to start seeing more of this return back to just in time from just in case. And that could, you know, put some upward pressure on vacancy. And, you know, each piece of inventory actually costs business a lot. You know, it costs them in working capital. It costs them in storage. It costs them in obsolescence. So I'd say take up in industrial will be maybe slower than what we've seen before.
Yep. And on cap rates, the US, UK, even New Zealand market have started to readjust. And our kind of line of sight on that is that, you know, US cap rates for office have expanded by around 200 basis points, which is about 50 to 75 bips softer than what we were expecting things to settle just 6 months ago. So we're seeing big movements there, Samir. There's no doubt about that. But so just what's your take on that?
Yeah, Phil, that's right. You know, if you look at the investor intention survey, you know, it paints a picture of tier one cities office cap rates ranging from 5.5% to 8%. And an industrial, you know, class A stocks valued at 5% to 6% range, and shopping centers in that kind of 6% to 7% range. So, you know, to your point, Phil, the outlook for cap rates has probably softened by another 50 to 75 basis points as the year has gone on. Things are getting, you know, a little bit softer in terms of pricing.
So those are big movements in the US. So from what you've observed so far, what's different in your mind, and do you think those differences are going to hold?
Yeah, Phil, I think, you know, in Australia we will probably see almost price parity with the US, maybe a little bit firmer than the US, particularly around markets like office, where, you know, we don't have the similar sort of structural challenges. But when it comes to, say, industrial or shopping centers, I don't see why there should be any big difference between US and Australian cap rates. Yeah. So we've kind of softened by 50 to 100 in the first year. I think in the next 6 months, I'd expect maybe another 50 to 100 to go from here as well.
Okay. Well, one of the ways that cap rates in Australia might adjust more rapidly to their steady state, I suppose, is debt maturity leads to, you know, if debt maturity leads to sort of asset sales and some repricing. Yep. What can we say on the maturity cycle?
Yeah, so the kind of overall debt envelope in commercial real estate sector in Australia is about A$370 billion. And our assessment, though, is that just 4% of this existing debt comes up for maturity in 2024. And then there's another 10% in 2025. The big maturity years are 26, 27, 28. So potentially, you know, about 15% of the debt will come up for refinance maybe in the next 12 months. I'm not expecting that'll be a catalyst event for a you know, massive set of forced sales. Mm-hmm. I don't think debt is the driver.
Yeah, yeah. But the cost of funding's increased by 2.5%, you know, 3%, and you know, bank credit committees, you know, continuing to be super vigilant on serviceability. So is this going to trigger more or less activity as interest rates settle?
Yeah, it's really tough being a buyer right now in the market. You know, it's really constrained the buyers. We've seen probably more interest right now from credit funds, you know, who look at the market right now and returns on some of these credit funds can be 10 to 12%. In the current settings. And these credit investors are typically looking at turnaround situations. They're looking at developments and other segments where, you know, covenant structure might need to be a little bit different. But Phil, just on interest rates and sort of the outlook for interest rates, I'm not expecting any urgency to cut interest rates till, say, late 2024. But just having interest rates stabilize, you know, just lets people get on with the decision making.
Absolutely. So, Samir, let's talk alternatives. I suppose a brighter spot. And we've both got young children that will be graduating high school shortly and looking at university options. Yep. I know we've both been looking at what that means from a student accommodation standpoint. Where are they going to house themselves? So, as you've gone through that process, what have you learned from that about the PBSA market?
Yeah, Phil, look, my son recently applied for a spot for on-campus living, and there was about 1,600 applicants for 200 spots. It is very tight. It was a very stressful situation. There's around 1.6 million university students in Australia, and currently, you know, we just have one purpose-built student accommodation bed for every 16 students, one for every 16 students. So it's a deeply underpenetrated market.
Yeah. Yep, I agree with that. And even with some of the supply coming through over the next 3 years of about, I think it's about 8,000 beds, the market's going to continue to remain very tight. So how are you seeing rents for student accommodation?
Yeah, look, there's a lot of dispersion in rents. A lot depends on location and, you know, whether it's a new, recently built facility with some amazing amenities around safety and socializing and gyms. So I've seen everything from, you know, suites that are at 350 a week up towards 800 a week. But we have a lot of proprietary data at CBRE on this. And what it's showing is that on average, you know, student accommodation has rent growth of about 5.5% per annum. So it's a pretty decent rent growth
market. That's very good. And this is an asset class which has been favoured by global investors. Yields have been more resilient to interest rate changes than the more traditional sectors, but are about 0.75% higher than build to rent. So the other alternative sector where we're spending more time with our clients is around the energy transition. There's certainly a growing role for real estate investors to carve out the value of the hard assets like land and infrastructure from energy supply. And this could be like what we experienced a little bit with the telecom towers and healthcare, for example. It's a high growth business where we're dedicating more time and resources. Samir, getting towards the back end of our chat here, I thought we would just go to a few thought-provoking ideas and thoughts, a couple of picks. So let's discuss the outlook for a few topics where there's been a lot of debate and a bit of controversy in the market. Why don't you hit your first one?
All right. I'll start off with residential. Look, we've been very bullish on residential market, I'd probably say well before others. It's partly because of this robust jobs picture that we just discussed. And our new controversial view here is that the fastest growth will be at the front end of the cycle and late cycle. So I'm expecting, 2023 and 2025 will be sort of double-digit capital value growth, whereas 2024 will be more modest. So next year will be more modest, sort of flat, low single digits. So I'm calling it, plus 10% this year, plus 5% next year, and then plus 10%. So you get to about 25% price growth over 3 years, and that reflects the higher cost of building new stock. My second controversial topic, Phil, for you is office occupancy. I expect office occupancy to be back to 2019 levels in CBD offices around the country, as late as maybe the end of this year, early next year. I was on a plane recently, Phil, and it dawned on me that it feels just like before. And, in speaking to friends, their kids who are going to university are all talking about, better experiences like their parents had. And, retailers are talking about returning back to just-in-time supply chains. So why not the office environment? I expect, office occupancy will start to, we won't even probably talk about office occupancy next year.
Well, that's almost like a belief in humanity, I think you got there, Samir. I'm with you. Well, it was interesting. Our global office occupier survey had us also found that over one third of firms still expect office utilization to grow from current levels, compared to less than 10% who expected it to fall from current levels. So there is upside, and portfolio optimization could also lift that utilization. But we also it's also need to be cognizant of the opportunities that are offered from hybrid work as well. But I tend to agree with you. I think that normalization is a good trajectory. Okay, what's the next one?
Third one is construction costs. So my view, construction cost, construction cost growth sort of peaked in 2022, June 22, when it was increasing at about 17%. And currently it's increasing, but at about 7% year on year. So it's kind of halved in terms of its growth rate. And my view is that, we'll see flat growth by year end. And the key here will be just what goes on with construction labor wage pressure, whether it starts to ease as some of these residential projects get completed.
And just given the size of the infrastructure pipeline and the tightness in the labour market that you referred to there, I still expect we'll get to mid to high single digits, construction cost growth, which I'm afraid, continues to add the challenge to the development pipeline, particularly in housing, as you reference. Okay, so last one, Samir.
Last one is refurbishment CapEx. So, a number of our clients have articulated some very large pipelines of new projects, refurbishments, including on sort of net zero initiatives. And, these commitments were all made when debt was cheaper, construction was cheaper, valuations were higher. I expect that, we will probably see a major downshifting, unfortunately. Not because clients don't want to do this, but more because, the economic climate does not let them do it.
I think it's fair to say, Samir, there's some rain clouds building, but hopefully you're not going to say we're pulling the covers out.
Not yet.
Not yet. Good. Okay, well, I hope everyone enjoyed our latest edition of Talking Property, The House View. We'll be back with our next House View early next year. If you like what you're hearing, make sure you subscribe. Until next time.